Hi everyone, my name is Warren Nauer and I'm a photographer with Volare Photography. I just want to thank you all for joining us again for another episode of our podcast. So when I first started this series of podcasts, my main goal was to create a series of informative interviews on topics related to families. And being in the business of photographing families, this was very important to me. So that is why I'm really excited to be sharing this interview with Judy Bucken today. Judy is from ProCanine, which is a dog training and behavior consultancy business here in Melbourne. And her knowledge about dogs is out of this world. Not a lot of people would know this about me, but many years ago, I used to be a dog trainer and also a behavior consultant. I used to go to people's houses to help them with their dog-related issues. And during that time, Judy was one of my mentors. So if you are looking at getting a puppy, I am sure you will get a heap of information out of this interview. Sit back, enjoy it. And as always, if you have any questions for Judy, there's a comment section down below. You can enter those questions in. I'll get Judy to answer them for you. And also you can head over to our Facebook page, which is Volare Photography. Or you can follow us on Twitter and our handle there is @VolarePhoto. Before we start the interview, I just wanted to dedicate this episode to my best mate, Oscar. Oscar is a 12-year-old golden retriever who unfortunately and sadly I had to put to sleep just yesterday. The last 4 weeks has been pretty hard on everyone. Oscar developed cancer, oral cancer in his mouth, and that rapidly spread to his rear legs, and he had an ACL operation, and that's when they discovered the cancer in his legs. We had his leg amputated, hoping that we could prolong his life, but unfortunately, the cancer spread to his other back leg, and by the weekend, he just could not walk. So, Oscar, we all love you. We all miss you. I hope you're having fun up there in heaven, running around with all the other doggies and playing with your mum, Ellie. And thank you to everyone who has sent their support to us and wished us all the best. And yeah, thank you all. So I'm joined today by Judy Bucken. Welcome, Judy.
Hi, Warren. Nice to see you again.
Excellent. Judy was my mentor many years ago. I used to be a dog trainer and behavior consultant like Judy, and to me, Judy was the utmost professional when it came to dog training. She told everything like it was, straight down the line, no holds barred, and she was an absolute wealth of knowledge. So when I thought about doing a podcast about owning a dog and getting a puppy, Judy was the first person I thought of who would be a great source of information for everyone out there who's looking for a puppy. So Judy, can you just give us a bit about your background?
Oh, from how far back? The early days?
From the start of the dog training, yeah.
Okay. Well, I got into dog training originally when I adopted a dog that had some fear aggression issues.
Yep.
I worked a lot off instinct because I always worked with animals. I worked on instinct and some of the things that I did actually helped her, but my curiosity went further than that. And I decided that I really wanted to know why what I was doing was working,
yep,
and whether there was something else extra I could do to help this dog.
So basically there was something in you that's, rather than just a dog owner, there was something in you that really sparked that interest in
She
dogs.
Was my inspiration to go further, yes.
Great. And then what did that lead to? Obviously learning about behavior consultancy and things.
Yes, I actually did a course through National Dog Trainers Federation, which was a fantastic starting course, mm-hmm, to give me the basis from the foundation that I led from there. And then after that, it was research, seminars, workshops, you name it, as much as I could get to absorb all the information I could.
Right. Yeah, and that's where I met Judy at NDTF. She was one of my tutors there. And like I said, she was amazing. And with your behavior consultancy, what sort you go to people's houses and...
Depends on what service people actually do want. Yes, if they have a problematic dog that requires something a bit more than a class obedience,
yep,
type situation, I do like to go to people's homes, yep, where I can. I like to see the dogs in their own familiar environment, and it gives me an opportunity to assess their relationship with the owners.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, we discuss and ask questions about the behavior problems to determine what the causes might be.
Yep.
And from that, we can then plot and plan what strategies we actually need to put into place to improve them.
Great. And in your experience, what's the most common dog problem that you see?
Behavioral problem. I would have to say the most common is probably, well, two, fear aggression.
Yep.
And that's usually stems from dogs not understanding what other dogs are about. They may want to interact, but they're concerned about it. And the other one is overexcitement at seeing other dogs, where
just
they
hyperactive.
Stop this hyperactive, yeah. And they just lose it when they see other dogs. All they think about is getting to the other dogs, and they right. forget who really is paying the bills.
And you do all this as part of your business, ProCanine?
Absolutely, yes. Okay, that is the mainstream of what I do during the week.
And would you like to tell us about ProCanine and what you guys do there?
Okay.
You're based as well.
Yeah. ProCanine itself, apart from obviously my base doesn't matter too much for people where I'm going out to see them.
Of course, yeah.
The mainstream work that I do is on the behavioural level, but I have other services that I use to fit people's requirements as much as I possibly can. One of those things would be a class situation.
Mm-hmm.
We run our classes on Sunday mornings, and that runs from private grounds that we utilize down at Lyndhurst.
Okay.
So that happens on Sunday mornings. Some people can't make classes, but they want to learn about obedience, and because they might be shift workers and their shifts change, it makes it a bit too awkward. So ProCanine also provides the private lesson situation, which quite often does happen down at our training grounds, but it might be during the week at different times. If necessary, I will go to people's places for that, but they do need to have the requisite room for us to be able to work.
And you train dogs from puppy school all the way up to experience advanced training?
We have new puppy school about to start,
yes.
So we do that all the way up to the top, and it's really a case of how far do you want to go?
Yeah, fantastic. Now, when I approached you, I called you up a couple of weeks ago and asked you about doing an interview for the podcast. I said to you, look, it's coming up to Christmas, and there has been a trend for people to get puppies and dogs for their children at the Christmas time. And I thought it'd be a great topic to talk about, because not everyone realizes how much effort goes into getting a puppy. But then you mentioned something really valid, and you said, look, it's not just Christmas time. It's a broader issue. It happens throughout the year. And I thought, yeah, you know, you're right. So what we're going to talk today about is those bigger issues about owning a dog, about what you have to do to prepare yourself for a dog. But just on the topic of Christmas and New Year's and the months after that, what do you think are the biggest reasons why people abandon dogs and the RSPCA gets a huge influx of dogs?
The reason, I think, is you've got Christmas rush coming up. The idea for people in their mind is they think of the puppy as a Christmas gift.
Yes, yes.
And they lose the insight that they need to always hold on to, that a puppy is not a Christmas gift. A puppy is for life.
Absolutely.
15 years if people are lucky. And I also think that Christmas time, it's a rush of everything else. Holidays are happening, you know, the rallies are coming over, or people are going off on holidays. They've got a plan for it. They've got all of this arrangement. They've got Christmas dinners to mm-hmm. worry about, and whether they're going to their in-laws first and their outlaws second, or vice versa. And in the meantime, they've got a puppy that they also have to be toilet training and setting the boundaries and the rules that the puppy doesn't instantly know, doesn't even instinctively know. So they're busy with everybody visiting and things like that. It's really not, and then, in general, the most ideal time.
And then 2 weeks later, when all the excitement's gone, mid-Jan, you've missed a big part of the puppy's early socialization, and then you've got these issues.
That's right. The puppy's toileted where it shouldn't have toileted because people weren't taking or paying attention. And that, of course, upset some people. People then starting to realize after the rush and the novelty and the fun bit sort of like gone, they kind of go, oh, I thought it would be a bit easier than this. And the reality sets in of the fact that they have actually adopted, whether they bought it or not, they've adopted a family member into their home. Yeah. And I think the reality sets in, and then people realize that, they don't have the freedom to go on the holidays they wanted, or the cost factor of looking after the dog while they go on holidays. They didn't realize that.
So
It all compounds.
So hopefully by the end of this interview, we can give our listeners some insight into these things that they should be thinking about before getting a puppy.
Absolutely.
I mean, owning a dog or any animal is absolutely amazing, and you get so many rewards. The benefit in your mind to owning a pet, like for kids and families situations?
Particularly for children, because yep. I would expect that adults would know this by that stage, but particularly for children, it's a wonderful way of teaching them responsibility.
Yep.
Obviously, that does rely on how the children are brought up and structured, because they need their boundaries too.
Sure.
But to teach the child the responsibility of care, the responsibility of the puppy's well-being in training and things like that, mm-hmm. within the child's capabilities, of course, yep. that depends on age. So certainly responsibility is one of the foremost things that I think of.
Yep.
It also, of course, lends itself to companionship.
Yep.
So there's a two-sided thing to responsibility. There's the joy of it, but there's also the flip side, the responsibility. But responsibility should also be a joy, even though it is an obligation.
Absolutely, absolutely. And like you said, I mean, when one of the premises of getting a puppy is for the children, for the kids, what advice would you give parents to keep the child involved with bringing up that dog as it gets older and the kids start wanting to do other things, you know, like play on the computer instead of looking after the dog? Is there any advice that you can get the kids to be more interactive? And also, what age is a good age for children to
have a pup? With the age question, I think that's an easier question yep. for me to answer at this stage. I would, and this is generally speaking, I would recommend roughly around about 10, between 10 and 12 years old, because then you've got a child.
When you say 10, are you talking about for a child to show responsibility? But you're not ruling out younger children in terms
no,
of...
No. So say if the eldest child is 10, but they might have younger children,
yep.
the eldest child then has got the capability and the attention span to make it the child capable of being able to concentrate and understand the sense of responsibility,
yep.
being able to do things. Obviously, the older child too, who's responsible for that dog, can assist with the training and the mm. supervision of that puppy mm. for the sake of the younger children as well.
So are you saying that if a family has, say, a three-year-old, it may not be a great idea to bring a puppy in at that time?
It may not. They've got to give it serious consideration.
Yep.
Every family is different.
Yep.
Every family's situation's different. How busy they are in their lives is also
yeah.
something they have to take into account. So you might have parents that have lots of free time and they do have a three-year-old child, but because the parents have got that free time,
yep.
they're able to spend that time dedicated towards supervising mm-hmm. the child and helping the child learn and spending the dedicated
yep.
time they need for that, as well as looking after the puppy.
Absolutely.
Other parents don't have the luxury of that time, and of course that means that they need to be able to work with a child who can reason with them.
Okay, great.
And I think that's what it kind
yeah,
of comes
no,
from.
Terrific. What about other considerations that the parents would need to make? Talking about the right conditions at home, space, things like that?
Yes, you need space. You need you've got to look into whether your work schedule allows for the time that you actually need. You need the right fencing.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to, that all should be done before
yep.
puppy gets home. It should be all set up first. You need to have the right environment. Are you looking at an inside-outside dog?
Yep.
If it's outside, does it have the shelter that it requires? If it's inside, can things be set up where you've got some management control until such time as that puppy has learnt what those boundaries of what it can do, can't do? So all of those things need to be considered.
And you have to be ready for the distraction that a puppy can cause as well.
Absolutely.
I mean, they're not angels, are they?
No.
Not in those early stages.
To pups, they are angels.
Yes.
It's more that the concept of living in a human home is so foreign
Absolutely,
to a puppy.
Yeah, yeah.
And we have to understand that the puppy's not born knowing that it shouldn't chew on the table leg
mm-hmm.
or chew up a a shoe or something like or that.
Dig in the garden.
Things like that. Yeah. So we need to make sure that we're able to satisfy the puppy's mental stimulation that it needs, but also manage the area for those times when we can't supervise so the puppy can't learn the things we don't want it to learn.
Absolutely. Okay, what about getting an older dog? Is where are the benefits in getting an older dog? And in terms of bringing an older dog into a family with a young child, is there any risk involved? I mean, I know the answer to this, but, you know, where do you sit on that?
Okay. Ideally, like I think an older dog can be a really good option for people, particularly if they have somewhat less time dedicated towards a puppy who needs constant supervision for toilet training and everything else. And, of course, if you've got young children, remember that the children are learning at the same time as the puppy. So you really got to teach both at the same time. An older dog, generally speaking, has gone through a lot of that or hasn't got that puppy energy that's looking for trouble. So getting an older dog, you quite often can see more what the character of that dog is going to be like. You're seeing what you're getting. But I am generalizing.
Right.
Because obviously people going for an older dog, they are perhaps going to a shelter and a shelter environment is not the same as a home environment. So they may not see certain things. For that reason, I often recommend people actually go through rescue groups because when they go through rescue groups, the older dog that's been fostered has been in a family environment with the rescue group and they can then pass on to the potential owners what that dog's like.
That's a great advice. Would you be able to provide some resources for our listeners to go into that later on?
Certainly could later on. We could add that.
What I can do is I can add those links to the website.
Yes.
To the bottom of this blog post. And if you're looking at getting an older dog through a rescue situation, then that'll be the first place to head to.
It's not to say that don't get through a shelter. I mean, you know, there's a lot of people out there that have adopted from a shelter and it's been a real success story. But it's just one of those things that's an added advantage. If you're not sure, it's an added advantage to get through
a rescue. And I guess through a shelter you don't get to see the history of the dog. Why was it given up in the first place or things like that?
Could be a stray or something like that. Nobody even knows where it came from.
Exactly.
So that is a possibility.
And you're not seeing it in the home environment. So you don't know if it's if you've got another pet dog, what's it going to react to and things like that.
Yeah. Normally the shelters and the rescue groups are pretty good that way and they've at least, you know, had dogs with other dogs so that they can assess to a certain extent what that dog might be like with other dogs and people and things like that. So they can give a rough idea. But the dog that's been through a rescue group living in a family environment that probably already has another dog and maybe a cat and maybe some children, you know, those sort of people can actually then explain what that dog's been like.
All right, fantastic. It's great advice there. What about the breed? How do people go about choosing a breed that's right for them and getting all the information that they need to get that correct breed?
Okay. One of the first things that I actually do recommend to people is not focus on what they like a dog to look like.
Right.
First, focus on what their lifestyle.
That is a hard thing for novice dog owners to do, don't they? Because they look around, they see a popular breed or a cute dog, and they go, I want one of those.
Yes, exactly. And then they pick the breed for what the breed looks like without realizing what the dog's actually going to behave like. So if they concentrate on what their lifestyle is, write some notes down on how much time would they be able to envisage that they could exercise and train the dog for every day. What sort of budget they need. So that can dictate whether they get a big dog or a little dog, because obviously a big dog will eat more, a little dog will eat less, so it will be cheaper. Also, exercise can be different for a little dog because obviously the further you go, the more steps a little dog's taking as in terms of physical exercise. Physical exercise is not the be all and end all. Mm-hmm. In fact, it's not even the most important.
Okay.
It is important. It's well up there, but mental exercise. But as in terms of which sort of dog, do they want to spend the time grooming? In which case, if they don't, rule out long-haired, fluffy dogs. You want to go for a short-haired dog.
Owning one, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yes, you've got to be able to spend that time. So you've got to work out what suits your lifestyle. are you the sort of person that you've running your business from home? Mm. And so you're sitting a lot. You need the sort of dog that's got the type of character who's really just happy to be around you, but just as eager to jump up when you're ready to go for that run or that exercise or that jog or whatever the case may be.
What about a family with a newborn or someone who's just a toddler starting to walk, things like that? There are particular breeds that, like, say, herding dogs would maybe be not so...
Look, you know, to be quite honest, I don't like to categorize that much because you've got breeds, you've got individuals within breeds, mm-hmm. and there are many quite perfect working style dogs that fit within that family environment. Yeah. So a lot, that's a really big
generalization. Yeah.
Yeah. A huge one. And I don't like to generalize that much, but you would want the sort of dog that is potentially a bit softer, tolerant, because if you've got a toddler, that toddler, as the toddler's walking, going past a dog, might grab at the dog. You don't want a dog that's sort of like, you know, so touchy and sensitive that the dog's going to turn around and say, "Oi, get your hand off me," you know, whereas other dogs will kind of like tolerate a bit more and they'll look around kind of like, what are you doing?
Terrific, yeah.
So there's different attitudes. Yeah. So I'm sorry that I can't give that distinct breed, but it is the sort of thing that you want to, once you've narrowed down your lifestyle, to sort out what dog will suit. Tall, short, long head, short head, character-wise, as in, you know, do I want a lazier dog? Not that any dogs are really, really lazy, except for greyhounds. Rehoming a greyhound, adopting a greyhound, brilliant. They're the fastest
adapters to
absolutely
home environment.
Yep, they love their couches.
Okay,
so that's really good. But you want to read into this, suit your lifestyle, and then work from there as to, okay, out of the dogs that suit that lifestyle, then you narrow it down to the dogs that you like the look of out of that list.
Okay, so unlike people, looks are last.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely.
I shouldn't say that. Personalities, when relate people, I mean, like, people love each other for their personalities, don't
they? Exactly. Yeah. And I think that enhances a person's
look anyway. That's
so,
right.
Yeah.
What about crossbreeds?
Crossbreeds, you will get crossbreeds at shelters, for example.
Yep.
I've got nothing against, I don't particularly like dogs being purposely bred mm-hmm. as crossbreeds.
You're talking about those dogs that are bred for, let's say, a low loss of hair, low allergies, things
like
that?
Well, you've got to be careful with that. That's another big, probably, topic in itself.
Yep.
And with those crossbreeds that might be put out there for that purpose, like low allergy, no hair shedding, quite often that's the cross with the poodle. I'm sorry, folks, but it doesn't really work out that way mm-hmm. because genetics don't, when you cross one with another, it doesn't mean you're going to get the best of both sides.
Yes.
So you might have some of that litter that do shed, some shed a little, maybe one or two won't, but you've got no guarantees. So crossing for that, that's why it didn't actually, the guide dogs for the blind, they were the ones who thought about crossing the poodle mm-hmm. with the Labrador, hoping that they would achieve a low allergenic dog for people who had sight issues. They realized it didn't work. Consequently, it didn't sort of take from that point of view, but it became very trendy.
Yep.
And that's where the crosses happen. And until they actually stabilize that breed and a crossbreed becomes a breed in itself, quite a lot of generations. So taking on a crossbreed dog, don't think that you'll get the best out of both. You might actually get the elements of each that you don't really want.
Okay. So that's great advice. Now, we've come up with what breed we want to get. We've gone through your list. We've decided on the breed. Now we've gone to the looks and we've chosen one. Where is the best place for people to find that breed and purchase a dog? Do they go through breeders?
My recommendation is yes, you've decided on a breed, you know what you want. Go to your Google or a dog forum and look up dog breeders of that particular breed.
Yeah. In every state, they've got the kennel council.
They have got the kennel council.
Victoria
they can
one.
Go through there for contacts for different breeders and what have you who are registered breeders.
Yep.
Those breeders are obliged by their membership to the Canine Council mm-hmm. to breed well and for the best health as possible.
Absolutely.
You want to read into the dogs because certain breeds do have inherent health issues that the breeders may be trying to breed out of, but yep. might be particular to that breed, and you want to be aware of that. Doesn't mean that you don't take them sure. on, but you need to have your eyes open. Go through to a breeder, because then you can view the parents of the dog, mm-hmm. or at least one of the parents. Of them, yeah. By seeing the parent of the dog gives you some idea of what personality that dog's got, so that you've got some idea of what personality your puppy might
yep.
carry through. If you get an opportunity, some breeders will have the parents of the parents, and that's great to be able to see a lineage, or at least ask the breeder what that sure. ancestry is about.
And at what stage after the puppies are born should you be contacting that breeder, visiting the kennel? And when you're there, what do you look for in the kennel to see that gives off a good vibe? And also with the litter themselves, which puppy do you look for? Is it the one that's coming towards you with ears popped up? One, you know, there's a lot of personalities within those pups.
It depends on what you're looking for, to answer that last right. question first.
So, sorry,
as to on. Which puppy should you pick?
Yep.
If you're someone like me, a trainer, and I wanted a high energy, something with a bit of drive, I actually picked a pup that was very driven.
Mm-hmm.
But that puppy may not suit.
For our listeners, can you explain driven and drive?
Drive is the dog's natural instinct, whether it be to chase after a toy, yep. to really, I don't know how to give that explanation any better, but to drive, the energy levels are high, very strongly driven, mm-hmm. won't give up on getting a toy. Some people don't want a dog that's that hard driven. They want a dog that's a bit softer, maybe a little bit more laid back. For the general pet dog person, maybe that has children, I would recommend take your child over, because the child is a part of choosing that puppy. And select the puppy that, yeah, does come over to the child but doesn't behave too boisterously.
Yeah,
exactly. So that it sort of seems where the child and the puppy actually get on with each other.
What about the one in the litter that holds back and is at the back of the queue and a little bit shy, timid? What would your recommendations be? He might be the cutest of the litter. And many parents and the kids would go, oh, look how cute he is. You know, he's so little and a bit shy.
I really think I'm talking about general pet dog people with children, and they just want they want their puppy to be a family member, a general family member. I'd say go for middle of the road.
Yep.
You know, the one that's holding back, I can't tell from here sitting on this side of the microphone, mm-hmm. is that puppy holding back because it's frightened?
Mm-hmm.
In which case it will need additional specialized training.
Yep.
So that's why I say go for the middle of the road, the dog that's got a bit of confidence. It's not over the top with the confidence where he's bouncing on everything and, you know, being too pushy, but also has just that nice, quiet confidence that will blend well with your children's personality, with what you want for your home.
Great. And generally with breeders, they release their dogs at about 8 weeks. At what age would you be looking at these traits in the dogs? 4 weeks, 5 weeks before you make that choice?
I would say, look, really the breeder is the best one to speak to, because they know their pups. They know their pups' parent. They'll be able to actually probably direct the person as to which puppy would be the right one for that family. Mm-hmm. And that's what a good breeder is about.
Mm-hmm.
But generally speaking, I would say that you start to begin to see personalities around about 6 weeks of age.
6 weeks, okay.
Yep. You don't pick them up at 6 weeks,
no.
But you can at least start to identify. Generally 8 weeks is when you pick up the puppy, because prior to that, it's very good for puppies to have that additional time opportunity mm-hmm. to play with each other and learn about playing.
Okay.
So we don't want to take them away from their litter too quickly.
Great. That's some great advice. Now, Judy, I'm going to ask you a question. I know you'll go on for ages. What about puppies from pet shops? What's your opinion on those? I mean, to be honest, I used to walk through shopping centers and I would see lots of pet shops with, you know, with the window, clear windows, all the puppies and rabbits in there. I'm not seeing as much of it anymore, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
So what's your opinion on puppies from pet shops?
For a couple of reasons. I'm not really a fan of puppies in pet shops for the puppy's sake, mm-hmm. because while they're spending days or weeks in the pet shop, they're generally housed in those, you know, small
yep.
Perspex sure. boxes. They miss out on a lot of socialization from a contact point of view and from, you know, learning about the world because mm-hmm. they're not getting out and about. From a person's point of view, I don't like pet shops being in windows because it usually tugs on the heartstrings, yep. which, of course, is what the pet shops do rely on.
Absolutely.
That's why they're in the Perspex boxes in the first place. And it encourages people to buy on a whim. And you don't buy a puppy or any pet for that matter, but you don't buy it on a whim.
And it pretty much goes against everything you said in the last 20 minutes about
Knowing the background,
knowing the breed, knowing what your lifestyle is like. And
exactly.
Things like that.
You don't know anything about history of health, whether that puppy, I've known of people who have picked up puppies and they've come out of the pet shop ill.
Yeah.
And, you know, so you don't know any of that. You don't know the background, as you say, of the parentage. So it really is a bit of Russian roulette, hit and miss.
Yeah.
And it's not a good way to start a family off. Because remember, too, if we're thinking about children in the house, mm-hmm. you bring that puppy home and it turns out it's not suitable for one reason, health or behavior or both.
Yeah.
And that puppy will go, it breaks the kid's heart. You don't want to do that.
No.
You want to really give serious consideration to the one you're choosing because you really want that puppy, once it's got your heart, to be able to share your heart with it for the rest of that pup and dog's life.
Yeah, that's a great segue into my next question is, preparing your home. Can you give us some tips on the best thing the parents can do or anyone can do to prepare their home for a puppy, either puppy proofing or whatever?
Yeah, puppy proofing. Puppy proofing is really necessary for those times when you can't supervise. Puppy does have to learn mm-hmm. that certain things have got to be around the house, but you need to be there to supervise so that you can train your puppy away from destructive chewing on things he shouldn't be destructively chewing. So, yes, you might want to think about baby gates to restrict access to rooms, puppy pen, so that when you do need a little bit of quiet time for yourself or work time or whatever the case may be, maybe puppy's tired at sleep time, you can put puppy in a puppy pen. Crate training is a real bonus,
yeah.
but it is to be remembered as a crate that is a training aid. It is not something you just shove the puppy in and leave mm-hmm. him and that's
Absolutely.
Where he stays
yep.
until you're ready.
Yep.
It's something you use for training. But all of those things as management, the garden as well is something if you've got precious plants, you might want to barricade that off, you know, keep them separate, allow access to a small amount of garden so puppy can start yeah. to learn under your supervision what he shouldn't do.
And that's I've got an amazing story. My dog Oscar, when he was a pup, we had our first veggie patch and he would only eat the cherry tomatoes.
No.
He would just go into the veggie patch. We had it protected with chicken wire and everything, but he'd get in there somehow and just pick off.
Very selective.
Selective. Pick off the cherry tomatoes. He used to love them, yeah.
Very,
but I
very
know
selective.
Exactly what you're talking
yeah.
about.
Yeah, so you've got to be prepared that destructive chewing, puppies, dogs, their mouth is their equivalent of our hand, and they will explore with their mouths. That's how they learn about things. And if they learn to do it, then it can become a bit of a habit. So we've sort of got to supervise, manage, and when we can't, we've got to put something up that mm-hmm. will do that job for us while we're absent.
Yeah. And you mentioned appropriate fencing, appropriate shade if once you're at work. And things
shelter
like,
yeah. from the wind, from
Absolutely.
The cold, from the heat, all of that. And, of course, you know, abundant supply of water goes without saying, mm-hmm. whether it be indoor or outdoor. But all of those things for the pup or the dog's well-being, comfort, all of those basic things need to be thought of first.
Okay. And the issue of training, I mean, it's a topic all of its own, from puppy socialization all the way to training the older dog. But just can you summarize how important is training, especially puppy preschool, socialization, and then taking that training further into adulthood?
Okay. Puppy preschool itself, I think, is very important for those who have never gone through raising a puppy before. Puppy preschool, to me, one of the most important facets, and this is sort of a bit contrary to what the general public might think puppy preschool should be about.
Mm-hmm.
It's about having access to an instructor who knows their stuff, They really should be people with a lot of experience and a lot of knowledge, because this is such a critical period of your puppy's life that you get it wrong and those errors could last for the rest of the puppy's life. So you want access to an instructor who can tell you about how to do proper toilet training, how to deal with mouthing, chewing, you know, destructiveness, jumping up, all those sorts of things, how to actually start training your puppy into recalls, but at the right level for the puppy's age, because we don't go into full-blown obedience training while the puppy is so young. He's got, you know, the attention span of a gnat. So the instructor's got to know all about that and be able to talk with the people that come there to give them this knowledge to take with them so that they can apply it in their home. Yes, the instructor also should be able to show people how to do the basic beginnings of teaching puppy to sit, manners at mealtime, all those sorts of things. So sit, maybe the semblance of, you know, getting the dog into it, the puppy to learn how to drop, just at least the basic beginnings. Obedience training isn't really quite that important for the younger dog, but it's a lot better if new owners do start it early while the puppy's a bit easier to manage.
It's like anything, get the foundations right.
Yes, and then, but it's the rules in the household, how to teach the puppy that you do deserve the respect that you want from the puppy, that you will set rules boundaries, what those rules boundaries should be so that for later on when you, you know, a lot of people go, I love my puppy jumping up on the couch. It's really, really wonderful to have a cuddle. And that's fine. I'm not one for saying don't ever let your dog up on the couch.
Yep.
But if you don't structure rules to teach the puppy when it can and when it can't, mm-hmm. when you sit on the couch and you're wearing your finery because you're going out to some high ball, you know, some real classy thing, and you're in your fine stockings and your best clothes – if you haven't taught the puppy rule, it's not the puppy's fault if he jumps up with his dirty feet
absolutely.
And rips the stockings or whatever the case.
And that takes
So you've got to know ahead of time.
Yeah, it takes me back to when I was learning about training and all that, there would be a section where you would teach your dog how to bark. And I would think, why would you teach your dog how to bark? Because when you can control your dog to bark, then you have a command to stop your dog from barking.
That is quite possible. And some people use that. It's not always the way to do it with some dogs, because some dogs get such a buzz out of barking that you can teach bark as well. It further encourages, but he might not listen to the quiet commands. Sometimes it can be misconstrued by the dog as you encouraging. So it's not always for every dog, but yes, it is one way of teaching a dog not to bark.
And just quickly, with puppy schools, most vets have them. You'd recommend going to your local vet?
A lot of vets have puppy preschools running. And the thing that I do recommend to people, you need to ask, what do those people know? What about the instructor? What experience? What's their background education? Did they get a formal education in dog behavior specifically?
Mm-hmm.
Where you know that they've been, you know, dedicated to a course that does teach them about behavior in particular. You want to have knowledge of how well is that puppy preschool structured? What numbers in the puppy preschool? Because you don't want to have a whole gamut of puppies and one instructor who's trying to get around to everybody but can't. So limited numbers of puppies. You want to have knowledge of what topics will they cover to educate you about. And you want to have, you know, knowledge that that instructor knows different ways of being able to teach dogs or puppies how to sit and how to do obedience so that if you strike a problem with one because it might not be a suitable method for your puppy, that instructor's got another way of doing it.
Fantastic.
So be very careful. It is an important part of the puppy's life.
Really good advice. Now, just again, coming to an end, but just talk to me about the cost. Most people don't realize how costly it is to own a pup. There are so many costs involved, you know.
Yeah, and the actual cost I couldn't sort of say in a dollar format.
But would you like to categorize what are things people are up against,
that they're going to have to spend their money on? They're, again, depending on what that dog they get, but if they've got a long-haired dog, they might have to consider grooming, regular grooming costs.
Professional grooming.
That might be a possibility. They might do their own grooming in between, but periodically the dog might need clipping or, you know, a more professional groom done. So they've got to take that into account. Feeding. is another one, which is going to be a forever constant, okay? So feeding the dog, take into account big, small, how much you want to spend on that sort of stuff. And you want to look at not cheap food because it fits your budget. You work on the dog knowing that it fits your budget to be able to get in premium food, high quality. I personally like raw, whole raw meal feeding. Same. That's here. My favorite.
I do the same, yeah.
Yeah. But if you're not going to go for that, not that I necessarily go for the commercial foods, but you want top of the range, yep, as close to natural as you can possibly get. And of course, they'll be the more expensive ones. So that should be something they factor into their budget as a definite must. Dog toys, dog mats, the equipment they'll need for training, the, you know, things that I mentioned before, the dog crates. You will need different collars, obviously, as the dog grows, all that sort of thing. I'm just thinking off the top of my
head.
There's
also pet insurance.
Pet insurance is
great.
And
vet bills, yeah.
Absolutely. Vet bills, yes, they do definitely need to allow for them because things will happen during the dog's life. I mean, I hope none of them are ever serious, but you never know, and you've always got to have some buffer zone for it, or have take out pet insurance from the moment you pick up that puppy. Do not wait until you strike a problem. Do not wait until you strike a problem and then try for insurance, because it will not cover that problem.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Take it out at the beginning, because a lot of people, when they strike, it's bad enough that they have situations where, you know, it's something really devastating and it's a major surgery that their dog actually requires. It's bad enough that people are going through the heartache and the worry of that without also having to consider the expense of it as well.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going through something similar right now, and just to have the ease of that money issue taken away, and you can just think solely about the welfare of your dog.
Yes.
That's so comforting.
It makes such a big difference. So I certainly do sort of suggest to people it's worthwhile considering.
All right, great, Judy. Now, before we finish off, have you got like a top five things people should do before getting a puppy?
Yes, I do. It was very, I have mentioned to you previously, it was very hard to come down to only five. But certainly one of the top five in the top five would be consider your current financial position.
Okay.
You know, you don't want to be, I can just afford this dog on the basis of nothing going wrong. You know, there'll be registration fees, and I didn't mention that before, microchipping things.
Oh,
like
and
that.
Of course, training fees.
All that sort of thing, you know, will need to be taken into account, and you've got to sort of make some allowance. If they're not needed, great. That's money still in the money box that you can use for something else. You need to take into account available time for training. So you've got to put in time for that dog to cover things such as not only the physical exercise that the dog needs, but even more importantly, not to say the physical should, you know, be abolished at all. The dog needs physical, but very importantly, mental stimulation, teaching tricks, training, all of that is mental stimulation. Dogs that are under mentally stimulated, they're the ones who usually look for trouble.
They're your clients.
They are my clients, yeah. General care and well-being needs. You know, you've got to consider the breed of the dog. Can you fit all of that in? So available time for all of that. Does it suit, does the dog that you're looking at or even having a dog or a puppy, does it suit all the members of the family and the home that you'll live in?
Yep.
So take that into account. And also when you've, say, narrowed it down to thinking that you might want a particular breed, have you thoroughly researched that breed to know all the characteristics that come with it? And also research the breeders, because different breeders, I mean, you know, if you go for a registered breeder, great, there are some way up there.
Yep.
So you want to check out your breeders and make sure that it suits what you're looking for as
Terrific.
Well. And do you want the dog to be willing enough to wait for it and not rush out just because it's Christmas? And that is a key.
Or you're at the shopping mall.
That's right. Yeah. If you kind of thought, no, this dog must be for Christmas and no other time, then I'm sorry, I'd be suggesting you're rushing into it. So, you know, take that on board as well.
Totally agree.
You need to also always bear in mind and consider that the pup you get is going to grow into an adult dog. It will not be a pup for very long. You know, it's going to grow very, very quickly. And that dog is going to be with you, if you're lucky, for at least 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to think 15 years ahead of yourself. How old will you be? what your energy level is going to be like,
yeah.
how old will your children be, will they still be at home?
Yeah.
So et cetera, et cetera. So those are some of the things. As I said, the list could go on, but that's what I had to narrow down to top five.
That's amazing. That's great. Well, listeners, if you haven't got anything out of, haven't got something out of this interview, I'll be very surprised. Like I said, Judy, she's absolutely amazing. Look, Judy, if people want to find you, what's the best way to contact you or to learn about what you do?
Two ways. My website is probably the best way to go. That way you can view what services we provide and make contact through that. And it also has our telephone number. And that address is ProCanine. That's P for Peter, R for Robert, O for Orange, letter K, number 9, procanine.com.au.
And you've got your email address, contact phone number there.
You can contact through the website, yep.
And will you be happy? I normally tell people that if they do have questions to ask, and they can either put some comments in the blog post, this blog post, or on Facebook, would you be happy to come back and answer any of those?
Look, more than happy. I do warn the listeners, though, that some of their questions might seem simple questions from their point of view, but maybe hasn't fed me enough information for me to give a qualified answer, in which case...
Get on the phone.
Get on the phone because I can then, you know, tease out the information that I need to then give better answers.
Right, great. And also your training's at Lyndhurst, you said?
Lyndhurst.
On Sunday mornings.
Sunday mornings,
and,
If they contact me first, though, because we do set an absolute maximum number of dogs per instructor, so the ratio is kept quite low, the only way I can guarantee that is I need to know what people are coming before they come.
Sure. Okay.
So I can make sure I've got sufficient instructors on the ground.
And with people at the moment who may have some behavioural issues with their dog, do you travel all suburbs of Melbourne or...?
Very much so, yes. It sort of extends itself that if I have to go too far, obviously with the time I have to spend in the car and the petrol, the expenses, sometimes there are cases where I have to add on additional travel expenses.
Mm.
But I've gone Dalesford, I've gone Moe, I've gone, fair distances.
Way.
Yeah, I have done that at times.
And those consults go for an hour?
The behavioural consults actually go for 2 hours.
2 hours, okay.
2 hours. So we cover quite a lot. People certainly get a lot of information and assistance for the service that they've chosen to take up.
And that information is on the website?
Yes.
Yeah, excellent.
Yeah.
All right, guys. I'll just like to say thank you so much, Judy. You've been amazing today. And like I said before, if someone hasn't got anything out of this, they've probably got their earmuffs on. So, guys, if you're definitely looking at getting a puppy for your kids or as a family, another member of the family, listen to what Judy has to say and really do your research. And that would be my take-home message. Do your research.
Absolutely.
Find out what your lifestyle's like and make some, you know, choice decisions there.
Yeah, but just hasten slowly.
Yes, exactly.
Is the best way to put it,
slowly. Well put. All right, thanks once again, Judy.
Thank you very much, Warren, and to everybody, I hope you've taken something out of this. In the meantime, have a Merry Christmas and a safe New Year.
Thanks so much, Judy. Take care. Bye.
See ya.
Wow, what a great interview there. Thank you so much, Judy. An interview packed full of information for anyone out there who's starting to think about getting a puppy or an older dog to add to their family. If you have any other questions for Judy, like I always say, head over to our comments section and you can enter them there and I'll get Judy to answer them for you. Also, you can add those to our Facebook page as well. If you're also looking to train your dog, if you've got a dog already, you really can't go past Judy's expertise. Like she said in the interview, she runs training sessions at Lyndhurst on Sunday. If you are in a location that's a little bit further away, give Judy a call anyway, and I'm sure she'll put you onto some good training schools right near your location. So that's it. Thank you, everyone, for a great year. We'd just like to say thank you from everyone at Volare Photography for making this year such a great year. I hope you all have a great Christmas. Enjoy the holidays with the family. Enjoy the new year. Stay safe. And we really look forward to bringing you more of these interviews in the new year. So take care and goodbye for now.